This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Diddy car bomb horror revealed. This is, we learn, a designer scarf, think Hermes, was used as a wick for a Molotov cocktail. Gee, I wonder who would do that. And we learn tonight, crucial evidence. Fingerprints on the Molotov were destroyed. Once that came out in court, Diddy's entire team goes crazy demanding a mistrial. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. I think the judge was completely wrong disallowing testimony that the fingerprint cards of a female perp on the Molotov, that's not going to be able to come into evidence. Why? That's critical evidence. Who destroyed those fingerprint cards? What if those fingerprints revealed a Diddy associate? And how, out of all the evidence, did fingerprints and a Diddy-related bombing go missing? Wow. Okay. Joining me, an all-star panel, straight out to Rob Shooter, joining me, host of Naughty But Nice podcast, can be found at robshooter.substack.com, former longtime publicist for Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, author of The Four-Word Answer. Rob Shooter, did you hear what I just said? The wick to a Molotov, and every Molotov case I've ever investigated or prosecuted, the wick was string, a piece of rope, sometimes a very rustic wick would be made out of paper, twisted to be a wick, but a designer scarf, think Hermes, if I'm even saying that correctly. Wow, I wonder who did that. Didn't you say he always wore scarves?
He did wear a lot of scarves and he loved a lot of luxury goods. This is a guy that grew up pretty poor. And so when he could afford luxury goods, he absolutely bought them. I was at his home once, Nancy, and there were bags and bags and bags of designer clothing that he'd never worn, that was just sitting there in his living room, in his kitchen. And he had never even bothered to take them out of the bag. It's a life of excess. And ultimately, now it looks like it's a life of crime, too.
I'm getting at something psychological. And I need a shrink. I'm just a trial lawyer. Dr. Bethany Marshall joining me, renowned psychoanalyst out of L.A., author of Deal Breaker. You can see her now on Peacock. And she's at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, help me find the right psychoanalytic words. Okay. A Molotov cocktail, right? That is typically a glass container, can be something else, but glass is the best conduit, filled with accelerant, what is that? Mm-hmm. Gasoline, toluene, it can be anything that will blow up. A wick is inserted into the top of the glass receptacle. Think of a Coke bottle, that's an easy one, or a mason jar.
Okay.
Typically, it is string, it is rope, it is twisted newspaper, twisted paper, with a nice long wick so the thing won't catch on fire as you're holding it right before you throw it. You light it at the very last moment and then throw it. We know fingerprints have been obtained off of that Molotov, what was remaining of it. It was found in the car, for Pete's sake, Kid Cudi's car. Mm. This is what I need from you, Bethany. Think about it. Who would use an Hermes scarf? Who would use that? Who would destroy that? Use it as a wick. Now think, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. Think about how Sean Combs destroyed all those tens of thousands of dollar hotel suites for a freak-off. The incredible vast waste of luxury goods, money, just throwing it. What does that tell you about the identity connected to this Molotov?
Well, furthermore, Nancy, somebody who is very impulsive, full of rage, not in good control of himself, perhaps on steroids, other drugs, somebody who just grabs a gun, grabs a scarf, goes to somebody's house, kidnaps them. I hear impulsivity and agitation. So of course you're providing a link between the Hermes scarf and P. Diddy, right? And the excess and the waste. But I see a more profound psychological link, which is that P. Diddy is not in control of himself in any real way. And so, like,
you know,
even
it's interesting the way that the money is thrown around. And I mean, I don't know, I've never had one, but what does a scarf like that go for? Like a couple of $1,000s? Could you find that out for me, Jack? How much does a scarf like that cost? And why would somebody soak it in a Coke bottle full of gasoline? Gosh, I wonder if they looked around for who went to buy gas at nearby gas stations at that time of the night. I bet that would be revealing. You know, hold on, Dr. Beth. I'm going to circle back to you about the psychological profile on that. Joining me, Crime Stories investigative reporter Sydney Sumner, combing over every word coming from the witness stand. Tell me about the fingerprint and the destruction of those fingerprint cards.
Nancy, prosecutors asked the fire investigator in charge of the case about fingerprint cards that were taken from the home when they were investigating the burglary about a month earlier. The fire investigator said he took those slides as a part of his investigation to see if he could match anything that was found on the bottle inside the car. And he said if that evidence had been destroyed, he would have had to sign off on it. But an LAPD officer who was not involved in the investigation at all signed off on the destruction of that evidence. And that's when the defense freaked out, stopped everything, and called for a mistrial.
Okay, slow that down one more time. You said the destruction of the evidence, that is the fingerprint card, was ordered by someone not connected to the arson investigation?
Correct. That's what that fire investigator testified to. And he said he found that very, very odd. That was not typical procedure.
Okay. What was the ground for the mistrial? Diddy's defense team goes crazy when that comes into evidence that someone ordered the destruction of that fingerprint card with a female fingerprint on it. Was that female someone that worked for Sean Combs? That's the big question. Do we know who ordered the destruction of the fingerprint evidence, Sydney? Can't be that hard to find out. And what was the grounds for the mistrial?
So that's exactly what the defense team is getting at. They called that prosecutorial misconduct because the prosecutors were suggesting that Combs ordered that evidence be destroyed and somehow paid off investigators to make that happen. And we already heard from jurors during jury selection that they believed Combs could buy his way out of anything. So on that line of questioning is what the defense had a problem with and what they said was grounds for a mistrial. Shapiro said that you can't unring that bell, but the judge obviously disagreed.
Straight out to veteran trial lawyer Philip Dubay joining us. L.A. County Public Defender's Office, that means he's tried a lot of cases, focuses on criminal and constitutional law. Dubay, thank you for being with us. I can only imagine the grounds for the mistrial. They're worried it's going to look like Sean Combs ordered that fingerprint evidence destroyed. That's what they're worried about.
Well, that's one angle. The other aspect is, to be fair to Mr. Diddy Combs, is it could be exculpatory. And the fact that Brady material was destroyed, pointing the finger directly at a third-party culprit, is evidence that he had no involvement in that arson. So I think the defense is entitled to raise it. And if you can show animus toward him on the part of law enforcement, that's grounds to kick it. I got to tell you.
That was the objection, Brady v. Maryland, which is a U.S. Supreme Court case. The state of Maryland prosecuted Brady for a crime. And in that case, decades ago, it was learned the state withheld exculpatory or evidence that proves you may not be guilty, withheld exculpatory evidence from Brady. Brady appealed all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court and won. The state must always hand over Brady or exculpatory material. Here's the reality. Don't you know? Please, you know what, Dubay? get real? If the objection, the grounds for the mistrial were, the state didn't give me Brady material, they're not playing fair. He would have blurted that out in open court if the objection was, this makes it look like Sean Combs ordered the fingerprint material, the evidence, to be destroyed. They wouldn't yell that out in court because they don't want the jury to hear it. They ran up to the judge's bench to make their objection. So it was clearly something they did not want the jury to hear. When I have done an objection, I have to state it that moment. Objection, hearsay, objection leading. You know, you got to give your objection immediately. It's like a tennis match or a sniper. You got to hit right then. You've got to strike. But they ran up to the judge's bench and didn't give their grounds for mistrial in open court.
Well, the prosecutor has a self-executing duty to preserve the exculpatory evidence irrespective of an objection. And the court should have stepped in sua sponte to say that I find that Mr. Combs' rights under due process were violated by the destruction of these prints. And now to try to introduce evidence that it was at his hand that perhaps somebody was bought off to destroy these prints, that is outrageous government conduct. Therefore, I dismiss this prosecution.
You know what? The truth is the truth. You know, you can spin it any way you want to. Hold on, let's go back to the courthouse. Again, joining us, Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter, host of Pop Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. What do you believe was the grounds for the mistrial about the fingerprint evidence destruction? Lauren?
Yes, Nancy.
There you go.
Sorry. A little flustered. No, Nancy, it was about the line of questioning from the government. I think that was the issue there. It was brought up that basically during jury selection, there was a concern from the jurors that Mr. Combs, Diddy, could buy his way out of things. Celebrity could buy their way out of things. And the way that this questioning was phrased by the government, they inferred that the print card that was discussed was destroyed by someone in the LAPD who was possibly paid off by Diddy. Now, during this line of questioning, the defense did not object until I wrote down the question. They didn't object until maybe the second to last question, saying, is this unusual that something like this would be destroyed? And there was an objection. It was sustained. And this was brought up when Alexandra Shapiro moved for a mistrial. The judge said, well, look, you didn't object, during the questioning. So we'll go to the jury and we'll say that, you know, you should disregard the question and you should disregard the answer. And it got a little heated for a minute when Alexandra Shapiro recommended that the judge tell the jury that the government made some improper questions or had some improper questions. The government did not like that. And essentially the judge just told, yes.
Question, I want to ask you about something you said before I lose the thought. Okay, you stated, I think you stated, that was a lot of information. I want to thank you for that,
yes.
Lauren Conlon. Lauren Conlon joining us at the courthouse again. Lauren, are you telling me the defense sat there and didn't object when the line of questioning started about the destruction of the evidence? They just sat there?
There was about two questions before they objected. And again, I wrote it down in my notes, but I believe they objected finally when it was asked, is it unusual for something like this to be destroyed,
not
at the investigator directive.
Lauren, you know what that means. When you ask a series of questions and your culmination to a series of questions is, well, isn't all of that we just discussed in those five or six questions, isn't that unusual? That is the cherry on top of the ice cream sundae. That's where you tie together all the questions you've asked. Oh my stars. Are you telling me Sean Combs is paying millions of dollars a day and that whole defense team just sat there, sat on their thumbs and did nothing until the whole line of questioning had almost ceased? No, there is no ground for a mistrial. There is no ground on appeal because the lawyers sat there deep in their own thoughts while that line of questioning was happening. What's their problem? Wake up, Brian Steele.
Well, I found my notes. It sounds like, yeah, they asked, the government asked, did he authorized the prints being destroyed, meaning did the investigator, the arson investigator, and he said no. And I mean, I'm not a lawyer. Should there have been an objection there that he, you know, they went on? Well, is it unusual that someone else would ask, right? That's not you, that didn't work on the case or directly on the case. And then there was an objection.
Well, frankly, I think that that should have been allowed because now, Lauren Conlon, the defense is going to be able to argue the state can't prove these were Sean Combs' fingerprints and the state can't prove that they were the female fingerprints of an associate or an assistant of his without being able to explain the state that it was destroyed by who. So now you've got this big wet blanket hanging over the defense. Yeah. Don't move, Lauren Conlon, straight out to Rob Shooter. See, Rob Shooter, I believe you have a very good example of Sean Combs buying off information?
Yeah, I do. And I was working with Puffy. I remember getting a phone call from a photo agency who had photographs of Puffy on the street. It was here in New York with a young lady that clearly wasn't Kim Porter, his then girlfriend. This was before Cassie and him started to date. And I remember calling Puff and making him aware of these photographs. He asked for the contact and these pictures disappeared. He purchased these pictures to make sure that they never, ever saw the light of day. So this is a man who knows how to get rid of stuff that he doesn't want out there.
To Rachel Fisher joining me, Rachel Fisher is an anti-trafficking expert. She was featured in a 2022 sex trafficking documentary, Surviving Sex Trafficking. She's a forensic nurse. She's been on so many sex trafficking and rape cases. Rachel, sadly, you've had experience where pimps have connections within the PD.
Very often we see that there's a lot of bribery and corruption that happens. And I've seen dozens of cases across the United States, across international borders of these pimps with their power, their money. There's a lot of money in sex trafficking. And even just the videos produced during these activities, people purchase that. People are involved. And I've seen so many officers, and I love Leos. I love law enforcement and what they do, but they actually purchase. They're the Johns or the buyers many times in these stings. And they're the ones that are knowingly facilitating this to happen. And so many times I see them paid off.
Lauren Conlon joining us, investigative reporter, star of Pop Crime TV at the courthouse. Lauren, tell me about the dynamic in the courtroom today. You've been there all day long. How is the state holding up? How is Sean Combs holding up? I'm sure the defense is ruffled because they had that mistrial denied. What else? And they, and that's their fault because they sat there and didn't object in a timely manner. That's very unlike Brian Steele. I've got to tell you, I think Steele's a really good lawyer. And I have heard that Tenney Giragos is a really good lawyer as well. Now, Agnifilo, jury's out on that after his debacle with Harvey Levin and the baby oil Q&A. I don't know what to think about that. But I know Steele's a great lawyer. I hear Giragos is a great lawyer. So tell me the dynamic. What's happening?
Yes, I mean, it got really spicy for a minute when they were discussing the mistrial and about how the Alexandra Shapiro wanted the language used from the judge, you know, referencing the government. But before that happened, I would say that Sean Combs was pretty happy because his mother is back in the courtroom. His three sons are here today, Justin, Quincy, and Christian.
Oh, please.
And he,
stop.
Yeah.
They're making a documentary. They're there because they're making money. They're going to sell a documentary. I don't know. Is it just me or has anybody else seen that camera crew that follows him in and out of the courthouse every day?
So since I'm in early, I don't really get to see that. But you're right. They do come in late every day, as does Diddy's mother. And she actually yesterday, I didn't see it today, but she comes in with a little cushion for her bum because the seats are very hard. I wish I had one of those. But no, overall, I think today with the testimony of the investigators, we saw someone from the LAPD who responded to the trespassing or burglary incident at Kid Cudi's house. And then we saw the arson investigator. It was a little bit slower, We recently started testimony from Deontay Nash. That's Cassie's stylist and friend. So things started to pick up because we started to hear some really not nice things that Diddy called Cassie during their relationship. We heard some explicit language, ho, slut, B. We heard that Cassie would cry.
We've already heard every filthy word and every fetishy act that I can think of. I mean, maybe there's more that haven't dawned on me. So not surprised about any of that. The jury's probably numb about hearing the word slut. Are you kidding? After the male sex workers came on and testified and they've seen those pictures and they all look nauseous.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Can I talk to you about the arson investigator? This is really important, Lauren Conlon, because in the indictment, the feds lay out a series of crimes that were affected by Sean Combs' minions, okay? We know that Sean Combs was not down at the Valero filling gas in a Coke bottle. He may have supplies that $2,000 Hermes scarf. Don't know about that. But the minions prove RICO using his business for criminal acts. So tell me about that arson investigator, because one of those acts is arson in the indictment.
Yes. So the fingerprints, or the DNA, I should say, that was lifted off of this bottle, which we found out was an old English malt liquor bottle, there was partial female DNA. And the arson investigator testified that he did not know who that belonged to. However, he did reach out to Capricorn Clark and Cassie Ventura at multiple times after speaking to Scott Mescidy, Kid Cudi, during the investigation. He said that both Cassie and Capricorn Clark did not answer. Again, he tried multiple times, and he actually even contacted Cassie's father, who is a firefighter, and said, please have your daughter reach out. She never did. He also stated that this investigation it's inactive, but it's also technically pending. They never actually closed it. And oh, you're going to love this, actually. So in one of the photos we saw, there was a black glove in the backseat of the car. And that was a really big point of contention for the defense for Agnifilo. He kept saying, well, did you test this black glove for DNA? And the investigator said, no, the owner of the car, Scott Mescidy, said that was his driving glove. And Agnifilo said, well, where's the other one? Why would a driving glove be in the back seat? So they were really focusing on this. And I couldn't help think of you because I thought of OJ. And then, but
not another glove defense.
Yes. Oh, it was a long line. Yeah.
I can see where that's going. How the defense is going to latch onto something that means nothing and then use it in the closing statement. You know, I'm very, very curious how the jury was responding to that arson investigator. And another thing, Lauren Conlon, isn't it true that when Capricorn Clark was on cross-examination, she was questioned about whether there was a third party on the phone when they were calling Kid Cudi? Could there possibly be a witness that knows Sean Combs went to the car bombing or ordered the car bombing?
Well, this third party was a woman named Lauren London. She's an actress, a model, really well known. And they pointed out, or the defense pointed out, that yes, okay, sure, maybe she was on the phone. They elicited that from Capricorn Clark. But they then said, you know, she remained friends with Sean Combs well after that. So, sure. I mean, there could be. But we also heard from, going back to the LAPD officer, he actually kind of countered some of Capricorn's testimony and the fact that when he pulled up to Kid Cudi's house after getting this call about a possible burglary or trespassing incident, he said that Kid Cudi pulled up after in his Porsche and he saw a black Escalade parked in front and then leave and then come back down a hill about 20 minutes later. He saw nothing about a chase, no car chase. He didn't see anything of the sort. So that was also kind of a moment that a lot of us were like, oh, okay, so there wasn't a car chase?
But there was an SUV on the scene of the car bomb that was connected to Bad Boy Records run by Sean Combs.
That was the trespassing incident, not the Molotov cocktail. But yes, this police officer made sure to memorize that license plate, go back, look it up, and then yes, he saw that it was registered to Bad Boy.
I'm curious, Lauren Conlon, we know that Sean Combs had gone over to Kid Cudi's apartment and gone in without permission and opened up a bunch of presents, we think Christmas presents, from Cudi to Cassie Ventura to see what he was giving Cassie for Christmas. Question, when Cudi's car, his Porsche, was bombed, where was it parked?
So it was parked right in front of the garage, or outside of the garage, and the driveway was pretty long. We saw a picture, and there was also other cars parked behind it. And, you know, we learned during cross-examination that he also had another Porsche inside of the garage. And for whatever reason, investigators took a picture of that, although I'm not sure what the connection is there, but it was just kind of interesting.
So Sean Combs, clairvoyant that he is, predicts that Kid Cudi's car, his Porsche, is going to be bombed. He says, I'm going to bomb his car, you know. A month later, the car is bombed, and we have him at Kid Cudi's apartment prior to the car bomb. So he knows where Kid Cudi lives. He's been there before, and he has gained illegal entrance into the apartment before. And now, a few weeks later, the car is bombed in a very, very dangerous way, and the jury can't connect the dots? Really? No wonder they objected and wanted a mistrial. They want this evidence out.
Yeah, I mean, I think yesterday and today have been just really important testimony. I mean, some of the most important testimony that we've seen so far, because it is referencing RICO, in my opinion. And, you know, I think it was U.S. Attorney Slavik who kind of said, you know, look, if this Molotov cocktail had gotten any closer to the house, it could have done some real damage.
Did you ever see one of these? Let me unwrap it. Anything like that? Sean Combs is Tootsie Roll. Tootsie Roll. Think about that.
Tootsie Roll.
Even just a niche. Yeah, that's all well and good, but we're talking about a car bomb. Joining me, Chris McDonough, Director Cold Case Foundation, for my purposes, former homicide detective, literally hundreds of homicide investigations. I found him in the interview room where he is a star on YouTube. Chris McDonough, I've prosecuted a lot of murder cases and investigated even more. But I've determined, after all of that, the single worst way to die is by fire. Not smoke inhalation, but actually burning to death, which is what happens with a Molotov. And I prosecuted and prepared a DP Molotov case. What do you think about what you're hearing? And I'd like you to weigh in on the missing fingerprint card. How devastating is that to this case? And by the way, the DP went forward after I already went to court TV. Okay. Sadly, I didn't get in on that, but go ahead.
You know, Nancy, you're 100% right about the fact that if somebody dies by fire, that is a horrendous way to die. And in this situation, fortunately, it was only a car and there was nobody around. However, that said, that fire could have spread from that car to the property, et cetera, and then other people could have been put into danger. About the fingerprint, this could be a simple situation that it was an evidence chain of custody that the statute of limitations had expired. And the evidence custodian said, you know what, this case is never going to go to trial. Let's destroy this fingerprint card. That's one possible theory in this particular problem.
Chris McDonough. Chris.
Yep.
You've been a witness in so many murder cases. If that were the case, the defense wouldn't have nutted up, technical legal term. They would have sat there and gone, and then go, let's clarify on cross. The reason it was destroyed was simply statute of limitations. There would not have been chairs turning over and a whirlwind and papers flying up in the air. Motion for mistrial. That's not fair. Blah, blah, blah. There's something about this that they don't like. It's like flicking holy water on the devil, right? When they start screaming an objection, there's a reason. It's not statute of limitations, my poor, sweet, naive boy.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. That is just one possibility. And then, of course, the other, you know, the more problematic for them is he did pay somebody off. Maybe it was the evidence tech. Maybe it was, you know, somebody else in the chain of custody. But the cards are gone. And, you know, they're going to make a bigger deal out of this. But I think the judge is going to, you know, see right through it.
You're right.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
You know, I'm going to go to Dubé on this trial strategy. Dubé, you know, if it were something innocent, such as what Chris McDonough just brought up, the defense would have sat there and let it all come out, let the state build up to a crescendo. Hey, did he pay to have this evidence destroyed? And then in one question on cross, say, you heard all of this, but isn't it true? It was destroyed because of statute of limitation. The case couldn't be prosecuted, so the evidence was destroyed. So all that is total BS, and they would use that against the state in final closing arguments. I mean, I would. But instead, they writhed. They gnashed their teeth and twitched their tails.
Well, I have two thoughts on it. First of all, back in those days, the cops could unilaterally prepare a form, send it to the State Department of Justice, seeking the sealing and destruction of any associated sort of ties to a suspect just based on the absence of evidence. And it was clearly within everybody's sort of frame of reference that Diddy would have been at the helm of that. But back then, detectives, investigating officers, and the leads had authority to fill out a judicial counsel form, sign up on it without any signature from the DA's office to remove it from somebody's record.
You know, Dr. Bethany Marshall, you know, I heard Philip Dubé's mind-numbing explanation. I like mine a lot better. But, Dr. Bethany, I have always found, and again, I'm just a criminal trial lawyer, all right? If it's not about murder, I don't know about it. Dr. Bethany, the mind of an arsonist, there's something hinky-er about an arsonist. Because the pain that burning to death inflicts, the watching the fire, the using the Hermé scarf or a lookalike as the wick, it means something. You've got to help me here.
Well, I do think of P. Diddy because he had just found out that Cassie was seeing Kid Cudi. And when you combine explosive rage, fire, wanting to do maximum damage, trying to send a message, going inside the house, ripping open packages to make sure, Christmas presents nonetheless, to make sure Kid Cudi wasn't giving a gift to Cassie. The arson, in my mind, goes to the biggest signal he can send without actually killing Kid Cudi right then and there. And by the way, who knows if he would have, if Kid Cudi hadn't been home. So that to me, I think of impulse control disorder, explosive, intermittent explosive disorder, rage, aggression, and I think of sex trafficking. We're all talking about RICO this morning, but we think of P. Diddy as the pimp and Cassie as his victim. You know, some other dude is coming in and taking away the victim, and he's going to scare that guy away.
Joining us now, a very special guest, Lisa Kennedy. I'm sure you've seen her on the airwaves, and you can find her at dailymail.com, where she is a columnist. And I look forward to every single column you write, but I was especially intrigued by your Diddy column. But first, just remember this. Whatever happens between me and thee about Diddy, we'll always have Murdaugh. Remember that late night we spent together on the airwaves, me sitting out in front of the courthouse in the pouring rain and you in your cozy studio interviewing me? Good times. We'll always have that night, Kennedy. Now, to the matter at hand, your article was amazing, but I'd like to hear, before I get to that, your thoughts on what's happening in the courtroom now. There was just a motion for mistrial by the defense because someone destroyed fingerprint cards that relate to Kid Cudi's arson, and which, of course, that would have killed Cudi if he had been in his Porsche, right? So catch this, Kennedy. In the car, they find the receptacle, which can be, you know, a jar, a bottle. I've had a lot of Molotov cases. And who else could it be? It has to be Diddy because it was a designer scarf. A designer scarf, like an Hermes, if that's the right pronunciation, like an Hermes scarf, was used as a wick for a Molotov. Hello? Wow.
That is a, no, that has Diddy all over it. But also, Cassie and Diddy were in an on-again, off-again relationship throughout a lot of their tumultuous union. And during one of those off periods, she was allegedly seeing Kid Cudi. And Diddy found out about it and absolutely lost his mind, because anyone in hip hop, especially someone who was more handsome and taller than him, was absolutely seen as an enemy, anyone who was a threat to his total control over Cassie. So when he found out that she and Scott had been talking, he lost his mind, and he told her that he was going to kill her and Kid Cudi, and that he was going to blow up his car. So she has already testified to that. Obviously, the relationship was explosive. And, you know, if these accounts are to be believed, Diddy was the wick that was lit, and, you know, the incendiary device was placed in his car. And who knows if it was meant to kill him, but it was absolutely meant to send a message that you are supposed to stay away from Cassie, who was my property. And it, next time is going to be much worse, and it will be deadly. And, you know, we heard some pretty damning testimony from Diddy's former assistant, Capricorn Clark. And she talked about how he was violent, he was threatening, her work hours were absolutely impossible, how she was kidnapped at some point. She was also forced to testify, she was forced to undergo a lie detector test because he accused her of stealing some of his expensive diamond jewelry. So, you know, the things that she said on the stand yesterday, I don't think bode well for Diddy. But, you know, this is just as a civilian observer. I've met Diddy many times. It's starting back in the early 90s when he was just a record executive with an incredible ear for talent. And then, of course, he became a hip-hop performer in his own right, and then an entrepreneur. And I had met him several times throughout his career, several iterations. And, you know, there were always rumors that he would make vicious threats against people. And that was one of the reasons that so many people didn't come forward earlier, is they were fearful for their lives. They were fearful for their safety.
Hey, Kennedy.
Yes.
You really got my attention when you said Kid Cudi is taller than Sean Combs. What, does Combs have a Napoleon complex? Oh, I can't
wait
to
hear
this.
Yeah, I think he does.
How short is he?
He's shorter than me. I'm 5'9". So, and maybe he was wearing lifts. I'm not sure. Or maybe he needed some. Or a little Beetle boots.
You know, Kennedy, you also point out, first let me ask you about the claims many people are making that the state just hasn't proven coercion or force. Mm. And you, and I agree with you completely on this, point out all she endured, free coughs that go for days on end, repeat UTIs so bad that the antibiotics wouldn't even work anymore, a developing mouth sores from hours and hours of oral sex with male sex workers, gastric issues, stomach issues because of all of the drugs, getting a male sex worker urinating in her mouth till she choked.
Yeah.
And then when she complained, Combs comes over and joins in. What idiot would think this was consensual?
Yeah, he joined in the pee-pee party, and, you know, she's talking about things in excruciating detail. And, you know, any of the female jurors on that panel have to be listening to this going, oh my God, that is absolutely inhumane, inexcusable treatment of another human being, particularly someone you claim to care about. You know, and one of the male prostitutes said that he beat her so badly he could hear it in the other room. And when Diddy stormed out, she jumped into the gigolo's lap out of fear and for some kind of protection. And the guy even said on the stand, I was worried that Diddy was going to kill me. You know, who was I to stand up to him? Because he's got bodyguards and a reputation and obviously is willing to make good on some of those threats. If in the middle of, you know, a psychotically intimate moment, he's taking his girlfriend in the other room to beat the crap out of her, you know, he'll stop at nothing to silence a male prostitute who could be his entire reputational undoing.
Lisa, what do you make of him parading his family in the courtroom for what I say as a production, as a prop? And what do you make of people that still say Ventura stayed in it willingly?
I think that those people really need to educate themselves about abusive relationships and the cycles of abuse. And a person with so much access, money, and power, and the power he lorded over her in order to control her life. I don't think it's as simple as that. You know, look at the bruises on her face. Look at the bruises on her body. Listen to her testimony. And, you know, any abuse survivor will tell you, they do try and extricate themselves from the relationships over and over and over again. But that's why abusers are so terrifying, because they're so good at, again, love bombing you and winning back your trust, especially if part of the promise is, you know, stay with me, we'll live a wonderful life, you're going to be a superstar, I'm the only one who can make it happen, and if you leave me, I have a laptop and a tablet full of videos of you in compromising positions, and the world will know that you are a worthless slut, and you will never record or perform music again.
Wow. Okay. You need to get in that courtroom and give that closing argument, Kennedy. This article that I love so much that you wrote, titled Kennedy's Furious Reaction to Day 4 of Diddy Trial and the Nauseating Courtroom Moment That Will Be Impossible for This Jury to Ignore. We remember an American hero, Corporal Priscilla Pearson, Ponchatoula PD, Louisiana, passed away in the line of duty, leaving behind husband turned widow Larry and her wonderful children, Lizzie, Brianna, MJ, Bradley, and Lily, sentenced to life without mom. American hero Corporal Priscilla Pearson. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.